Welcome to AIM's Connect podcast. My name is Amos Kennedy. In this episode, I continue my conversation with Eddie and Rachel Anderson, who are serving God with AIM in a remote part of northern Kenya. So we've talked a lot about what God has been doing among the Kabra in the past 20-odd years. But for our listeners, do you want to perhaps give a bit of a history to the background of mission work within the Kabra and how those guys who have perhaps have grown up in the church, how they were able to do that? And sort of the first seeds perhaps that were sown amongst the Kabra in terms of evangelical mission work?
Yeah, I mean, the story in the Kabra goes back quite a while. You know, I think back into the late 70s when the missionaries first came into Kabra country. Part of that was my uncle, Billy, Anyway, they started out in the 80s. And what happened is, you know, they ministered for about probably about 16 years amongst the Kabra, trying everything. They came in, they were actually assigned by the government, the place called Kalacha, to start ministry because it was where there was water. And my uncle was given the job of going to find water for the people. And so we had to go find places to dig wells and do that sort of thing.
There was actually a lot of animosity to having an evangelical missionary up among the Kabra. They had allowed Catholics in, but they hadn't actually allowed any evangelicals in. So he had to commit to water projects as well as planting trees. So he signed on with an organization that wanted to do tree planting up in the Hoori Hills, which is still Kabra, but is a more has higher rainfall than most of the rest of the desert area. So he kind of got in sort of under the radar in a way. And he also, it was also through his own father who was part of the commission overseeing the development of Marsabit County. So Eddie's grandfather, Earl Anderson, was playing a role in the local government and said, well, I know a guy who could do tree planting for you. And that's how Dilly got permission to come in. If he had come in as just a traditional missionary, just the government never would have let him in.
But anyway, as they went, you know, they tried everything. You know, they did tree planting, they did putting in wells, they did Bible studies, they did literacy, they tried all kinds of things. And it was like 16 years before the first Kabra committed to become a Christian. And then it became a trickle effect where you had basically just one family member after another started coming to Christ. And there were several families in Kalacha that started coming, and then it slowly grew. I mean, some came because of visions. I know at least one old man, he'd been part of the Ayana, and he'd become very sick. And when he was very sick, he'd seen this vision of Christ and of this missionary that he should go to find help. And then he came, and then he brought his family, and he became a Christian. And basically, he came and discovered the mission there. And other missionaries came and helped my aunt and uncle do the work. But it was a slow process. You basically had this trickle effect until about the time that we arrived, where there were probably about 70 people coming to church. And there was a few people doing outreaches in places, but there was just, they were just, you know, babies. And you had some of the first generation were starting to have, it had some children, and those children were the first second generation people to be in the church. And that actually is kind of what we've ended up working with. Like when we came from Kalacha to Dukana, When we came up, we basically asked the church to send some people with us. And what they did is sent us one. A couple of the guys were first generational, like Dub Giro, but then you had some second generation, like Dub Gilo, you know, and Barako and stuff, who had been in the church as kids, and they'd heard the gospel, they'd heard the message, and they had accepted and been baptized, but now they came out to the front lines.
And it's neat how this all even comes around with, especially with Dub Gilo, who grew up in the church and grew up, you know, being impacted by missionaries, by short-term missionaries, and with a Christian influence. Well, now he's leading one of the Bible studies that is meeting where his aunt lives. So his mother's sister lives way out here behind Sora Mountain. And she hasn't been able to go to church for probably 30 or 40 years because she hasn't lived near a church. But the church has come to her. And now she's coming and hearing the gospel from her nephew, who she didn't have contact with. I mean, so these things, it's amazing how this is coming around. But here we're seeing a lot of brand new baby believers coming to the Lord here in Dukana. And so, you know, we're working alongside of people who are just finding out what it's like to walk with Christ and to make decisions about their life with Christ at the center. So it's a really exciting time to be here.
And it's been exciting, too, as we talked about it. You know, we came up to this area to started doing outreach with this second generation of believers. And so we felt like you had an advantage over the first missionaries, in a sense, as we came into Dukana. But one of the things I think that was most tremendous, like I remember we had been starting the work and things had been going, a famine had happened. It might be long stories and all that. Through the famine, people had heard the gospel because they came to us for help. And God, through many donors, helped us be able to do a famine or food for work project. And a lot of people got the gospel. Well, all those people that came to us now spread out and started sharing what they'd heard. And so we had villages after villages getting the mass message because everyone had come to us because of famine. So God used that as a great way to share the gospel. But what really I think was really impacting is, and I talk about it as kind of a turning point in some ways with our evangelists, was when we had a demon-possessed lady that showed up. And it was really interesting because that morning we had had a Bible study and we'd been reading about the demon-possessed man, you know, at the Gezerzines, you know, when Jesus comes in the boat with the disciples and you have legion on the shore. And Jesus casts the demons out into the pigs and they go into the water and everything else. And I remember that morning we had that study and our evangelist turned to me and said, you know, does God still do that? Does Jesus still do that? And I'm like, well, it's the same God yesterday, today, and forever. And he said, yeah, he's the same God. He's like, well, there's somebody like that here in this town.
So yeah, Eddie has this amazing study with the guys and I don't hear anything about it because I am busy at keeping the kids going because we have three kids homeschooling at the time. And the kids they're buckling down to study. And this woman comes charging in the house. I don't want this. And I'm like, what don't you want? And in Gabra, it's really hard with the language to hear the difference between I don't want this and I do want this. So at first I'm like, does she want water? You know, like I'm just trying to like roll with this old lady who is about 4'10", maybe weighs 85 pounds, but she's in my face. She is telling me, I don't want this. And she's just rampaging through the house. So I finally get her to come into the living room and to sit down. And I call over, Eddie comes in the room. She's like, he knows. And I'm like, no, he doesn't understand you. He doesn't know what you're saying. And so we got a translator in and it turns out she is this woman that they're talking about, this demon possessed woman sitting in my lounge next to me, like yelling and screaming.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, here I come in, I see this lady, she's just in hysterics, you know, and I turn around and I call Dube, one of our evangelists. And I said, can you come over and translate? I can't figure out what this lady's doing here. And you could almost see, you know, his black face turn white. I mean, he was just like, you know, that's the lady we talked about in prayers this morning. She's nuts. She's been chased by these demons for all these 6 months. She's traveled all over Gabra land and just, you know, can't sleep in her house. She won't go in there. And he's just like kind of shaking in his boots. So I bring him in and I said, well, let's translate. And we start talking with her and start getting the translation. And it comes, I've come here. He says, because there's nowhere to go. And I said, well, what's going on? I said, well, I've went to the Muslims and it just got worse. I went to the shaman and it got worse. I went to the Catholics. They couldn't do anything for me. There's nowhere for me to go. I'm just chased by these demons. They're like these hyenas every night and I can't sleep. And I run and I run and I run. And she starts talking about the villages she run from. And she's run hundreds and hundreds of miles
on foot,
being chased by these spirits.
And finally, so Eddie says to her, so do you want Jesus? Like, you want this? And she's like, duh, that's what I came here for, stupid.
And like, do you want to be free? You know, and we're like, do you want to be free? And I explained that Jesus Christ could heal her. You know, and we looked into that and we just opened that passage up and said, look, Jesus Christ can heal you. And I said, do you want that? She's like, yes. So I said, let's pray. You know, so we prayed over her, you know, in the name of Jesus Christ and cast out the demons. And what happened is you saw this face that was in hysterics. And she was just going mad as we prayed. You could just see peace replace that hysterics. All of a sudden, here's this meek lady sitting on the couch just at peace. You know, and then we talked about, hey, if you want to accept Jesus Christ as your savior, it's important because once, you know, that Jesus had talked about if you cast out a demon and you don't replace it, what can come in is worse. You know, he said, well, we need to pray. Do you want to put Jesus in there so the demons can never return? And she's like, yes, yes. So right there, we prayed and she accepted Jesus Christ as her savior. And then I said to her, hey, do you want to go back to your village, you know, back to your home? Would you like us to come pray over it? Because I knew she hadn't been in her home in 6 months. And she says, yeah, yeah. And I said, you want us to pray over it? Yeah, yeah. So we walked over to her home and we walked over with the evangelist. I think Rachel was with me. I was with her. And we walked over to her home and we got her home and she starts picking up pace, you know, and we're just walking. We're like, what's going on? And she slips right inside, you know, and I go in after. I'm like, whoa, did you want us to pray over this before we came in? She says, well, I'm covered by Jesus. The demons have no authority over me.
Yeah, she just was completely
at peace. And she was completely at peace. She's like, I can be here. So as we prayed over the house, already she had claimed the victory. And I looked at that, and I remember as we walked away from praying over the house, I'm walking back with our evangelist, and he looks at me, he says, Jesus is still alive. He still does what he did back in the Bible. I said, yes, that's what he told us. He says, Jesus is alive. I said, yes. And all of a sudden, you had this picture of someone who used to do Bible studies, but now he was doing Bible studies. I mean, he was like, the word of God was alive. Those words were alive. Those stories were alive. That was real. And all of a sudden, when our evangelists would go out, they get out with courage and they went out with authority. You know, as Jesus, you know, as they often talk about Jesus, he spoke as one who had authority. Well, all of a sudden, now we had evangelists because they'd experienced and they'd seen the change. And the other evangelists, when the ladies started coming to Bible study, they could see this transformed woman. And they said, it's real. It's not just stories in the Bible. We're not just talking about our eternal souls. Jesus is alive. Jesus is active. The word of God is active. And so these guys started sharing with passion. And then village after village after village is begging for these guys to do Bible studies. And I think that's the amazing part about it, is these, as we look at this new generation, as we come on, and we've been so blessed by these guys that have been raised in church, but now to see them having been raised in church and taught those things, to see that they're real, they became these star evangelists because they're teaching what's real, not just what they learn, but what they know.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's really real to them, and they can see that the change is taking place in their own people. That's amazing that they just are filled with that same drive to reach those around them. That's another story that I love. I think also because it was real to me, in the sense that I know Botu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just know what she's like now. And obviously I didn't know her before her conversion, but the energy with which she attends church every Sunday and is so eager to be involved in different things. And yeah, I just have great memories of her, particularly one where was it a Christmas event or Easter perhaps, and there was sort of a women's choir, I remember, at the front of the church that she wasn't necessarily involved in, but she definitely got herself involved and sort of stood up and just took it upon herself to become the conductor. I got a video of that on my phone somewhere. It's great. Fantastic. Yeah, speaks to how Christ has really worked in her life and completely transformed her. So amen to that. I guess one more of your ministries that I'm going to have to ask you about is the radio, where I can see that you're sitting now. Inadvertently have my Chelby FM, I don't know if you can see, my Chelby FM t-shirt on today, 91.1. So if you want to tell us a bit more about kind of the vision of your radio ministry, perhaps what it is, who it reaches. You've already hinted about Peter there, how he sort of broadcasts messages, but maybe you want to provide the listeners with a little bit more kind of context on how that's been especially useful in the past year with coronavirus pandemic and different things, and putting your messages out there and being able to reach people whenever you can't maybe see them in person.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you a ton on it, but I don't know if you want to hear the whole story. But anyway, in the last year, we've seen a huge amount of change. Like, it's a miracle that we have a radio station to start with. And that's a whole story in itself. Yeah.
You know, your viewers can't see you and I both laughing here right now. You know? I really think we owed a little, you know, just Amos and I are laughing because Eddie's like, well, do you want me to share the whole story? Which is another like 4-hour segment.
Yeah. So what I want to say, like in the past year, you know, you've seen a lot of changes, of course, with coronavirus and everything like that. You know, if you think about it, you know, last Christmas, you know, we'd had, you know, record numbers. I mean, we had a huge Christmas service. People were coming to church. We were just so excited about the impact the church was making. The outreaches were expanding. And it just seemed like everything was up. And then all of a sudden this corona thing comes. And it's all of a sudden we get these, you know, not that everyone's getting sick up here, but we were getting all of a sudden we had to go into these mandates. They're like, okay, no more church meetings, no more gatherings. And we're like, what? We've got all these villages. is. And so what we were just so blessed by is that right before Corona was called, we'd gotten this delivery of like 200 radios. And so quickly we dispatched our evangelists and said, okay, get these radios into the hand of all these villages where you've been doing outreaches. Hand them out. And so we spread them far and wide to like every place. So all these different villages. And so everyone had these radios and now no one could travel. So all of a sudden we taught our evangelists said, okay, now start preaching on the radio. Share your messages that you were sharing in the villages on the radio. And so what happened is that the guys in the villages would tune in. And so then they were able to do their Bible studies. Now, not only just for the villages that they'd been doing evangelism at reading in, everybody was coming in for the messages. And one of the other things is that now that not being able to do our Bible studies, they had more time to prepare and we did more programming and we just kind of focused on more programming. And also it became the place that everyone was listening to because they needed to find out what was coming next. You know, when you're dealing with a worldwide pandemic, you want to find the news, what's going on. And what's the easiest place to go is to turn on your radio and hear about it. And so our guys are broadcasting that. We're putting on more programs. We're getting on new programs. We're doing call-ins. People can get counseling. People can ask questions. And so all of a sudden it became this huge tool, you know, and we found ourselves reaching out to more and more people that we never even had a chance to reach to just because everything shut down and we had this lifeline.
Right. And some of your listeners might be thinking, well, why would you listen to the radio? You can just look on your smartphone. Well, where people here live, there is no cell phone network.
Not so.
They might be a full day's walk or a full week's walk away from the closest cell phone signal. But all of their phones are made with an FM capability, so they can actually listen to the radio anytime as long as they can charge their phone. And many of them carry actually a little solar panel to keep their phone charged. Or with the solar radios that we had, those had a solar panel built in so people could actually listen to the radio anywhere they were. And radio is wildly popular here because people don't have TV and they don't have smartphones and they don't have network everywhere they live.
And one of the things we saw was really one of the impacts, too, is that we had our evangelists now doing messages on the radio. We started new services in the morning on Sunday for people that couldn't go to church. And we did it in four different languages. But one of the things that we found is that each of these programs that we began in the pandemic, we thought, OK, now we can start going back to our normal programming. But then people started calling in and say, don't stop. We're loving those extra programs. Keep them going. So now we got our evangelists on air at night. And out on those roads and on the byways and on the highways during the day. So they're like double teaming it now. But it's just one of those things where it became this lifeline for people and they didn't want to lose it. Even though like the world is starting to open up again, people are like, don't pull away that lifeline.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So good just to know that you guys were able to continue in mission work and in those outreaches that I know are so important to people in the villages that surround Dukana in this last year. Because I think at the start of the pandemic, there was a sense where people around the world were obviously concerned about what was going on at home. But then as it transpired a couple of weeks into it, you know, people were starting to think of the ramifications for nations that are less well developed, perhaps healthcare systems that perhaps can't take as much of a strain. Really encouraging to hear how it didn't have too much of an impact on you. Would that be right in saying?
It's still kind of this great mystery. We're friends with an epidemiologist who lives in Kenya and works for the CDC. And she said they're still not seeing the numbers that they expected to see. They are seeing it, but not like it was predicted to be. She thinks that it may have something to do with diet. But beyond that, we really don't know why we're not seeing the infection rate that should be there. Currently, Kenya is at less than 5% of tests are coming out positive, and it only ever peaked out at around 15 to 18%, which is incredibly small.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Likely, we'll find out people have antigens to it who were asymptomatic. They do think a lot of it in Kenya has to do with the younger population, but, you know, history is the only way that we're going to be able to tell, you know, looking back eventually when things calm down a little bit and going through just, you know, the data to try to figure out what happened is what's going to be necessary to figure out why so many sub-Saharan Africa countries did so much better, because South Africa has not done as well either. So it'll be interesting once the data can all be analyzed to find out what they believe happened here.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's an encouragement in many ways, I suppose, to a lot of you that work in Kenya and that were perhaps worried at the beginning of the effects that it might have on somewhere like your location where it's already tough for people to get access to healthcare. So very interesting. I guess ask a bit of a lighter question. So what are, do you think, perhaps together or individually, some of your funniest memories from the past 12 plus years in mission in East Africa?
I don't know. When you mentioned that, I just remember that time, you know, when we had, I think Jerry Heard had come in with the flight.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we missed that for church. I think you were there.
Yes, I remember this well.
That was one of the funniest things. You know, get up in the morning, we're getting ready for school, and this kid comes in, is got his leg cut open, you know, and they're like, he needs help, you know. So I'm like, well, send him down to the clinic, the government clinic. There's got to be someone there. They run down. There's no one there. They bring him back up right as the service is starting. So here we're in there getting ready for the service. I'm supposed to be preaching. And they drag me out the back. You got to do something about this leg. I mean, it's bleeding everywhere. So I take him back into the house. I set him on that same counter. And I'm going through Rachel's stuff, getting out the suture stuff, cleaning it up, getting ready. I'm gloved up. And then you come in, you're like, it's time for you to preach. And I'm like, Amos, you got a cover for me.
I was like, where is Eddie? You know, we were sort of waiting. I can't sing any more songs. Where is he? You come in, oh dear, it's like an operating table, kitchen table or operating table, I don't know.
Oh, it was cracking me out, because then, you know, here I'm like gloved up, I'm trying to get, you know, the lidocaine in the syringe, and I'm sitting there with this thing, and then I'm like trying to explain to you how this sermon's supposed to go, and Jerry's like videoing this whole thing. Wow. And it just cracked me up. Look at my arms flailing and everything else with the gloves, and you know, lidocaine going everywhere. But anyway, you know, those sort of things, you know, just brings, you know, the humor there. And then it was a blessing, you know, to be able to sew up the kid, and he healed well. And
yeah,
but you know, I just looked at that morning, and it was just like a comedy of errors. You know, it's just like, you know, nothing went the way you planned it. But yet somehow God brought us all through the whole thing. Yeah, it was just awesome.
That was a story that sticks out in my mind from that year as well. That was amazing. I guess to finish off with, on the other side of those, you know, those kind of lighter, most more hilarious stories that the life of a missionary brings about, on the other side of that, what do you think perhaps that some of your greatest challenges have been in the last 12 years plus?
I think something I've been doing a lot of, like just recently did some reading on and recognizing more and more, is the long-term toll of staying out on the mission field for a longer period of time can have on just on your heart and mind. Because like you have, of course, the initial goodbye to your family and to your home culture. And of course, you do that repeatedly every time you go on home assignment. You're saying goodbye to one culture, hello to another, you know. But then also, like, we came out to Kalasha, and within like 3 years, pretty much 3 to 5 years, every missionary who had already been there and established ended up retiring or leaving the field in the given vicinity. And that was a huge turnover to go through. And so I think starting to just really recognize the impact that, you know, people saying goodbye so frequently has on your heart and mind, that it's really hard to process that ongoing grief. Because, you know, you have new missionaries coming, and so you put time and effort into them, and then they decide to move on to a new area or go back to the U.S. or for whatever reason. And so it's that loss again of another relationship that you're building up. And then you add to it, like, transformation of culture is such a long process. And I think we've had a lot of the just heartache of seeing people make 2 steps forward and 3 steps back, you know, where you think, oh, look, these people are really making a decision. And then along comes something and, you know, they're back to the shaman, they're back to the tradition. And so that kind of grief as well. And I think it's just that those kind of hard, difficult situations, they accumulate. And it's really hard to find good time and good space to process that without sounding like you're angry or bitter with people. Because we're not angry or bitter people for the most part.
I don't think so.
Maybe we are. It still takes its toll. And, you know, you find yourself eating a lot more chocolate than you used to, just because you're like a little stressed from it all.
Yeah. Hunting in the bottom of that freezer.
Yeah. Be careful. Don't touch the chocolate. Right?
Yeah. And I think there's two big struggles, I think, that I've seen over the years. I mean, the first one comes up with financially. especially as we first started our ministry and our finances were very tight. It was deciding where do you use it, where do you not use it, and how do you get your food the next day. And one of those things is when you're dealing with a community where everyone has needs. I mean, when you're dealing with a Gabra where people on the verge of starvation constantly, you're like, how do I balance this? How much do I give away? How much do I keep? What do I do when people come to me day after day after day begging, and you can see the need is real? How do I respond to that? Because it can just eat away at you. You know, part of you is like, I want to give every single penny. And the other part of you is like, well, if I give every single penny, I can't live. And so you end up with this tough balance, you know, financially, of knowing how do we balance that? How do we do it with a happy heart? You know, how do we still keep joy? Because other times you get into the point where you start getting bitter, because either because you can't share or because the people keep asking, you have nothing left to give.
And I think, it's, you know, and some of that giving too, is we've been more involved in medical care for people like with big issues. Like we've had to fly a baby out who needed heart surgery, or we've had to fly a man out who needed a hip replacement. And sometimes you do this thing to help someone. And then like the guy with the hip replacement, we flew him out, paid for the flight. Well, once he got to the hospital, he decided he could just live with his hip. And so just kind of throwing it back in your face, you know, so trying to, like Ed's saying with the giving, it's not just all the needs. It's you're trying to give wisely, right? Because it's God's money, and I don't want to be a fool with his money. So when you do something, you're like, why didn't I see that, right? I should have known better than to give to that case, you know, and just knowing who and when to give and not getting disappointed when people don't do what you expect them to do with what you've given them.
You know, and other times, you know, also coming to that point where you're just out of cash, you know, and you're like, oh man, I still need to move on. And being able to slow down and really trust God completely, because, you know, you can't do it on your own. And when they come to those points, we've seen God do miracles, but it doesn't mean it's easy. Mm-mm. You know, he does things that we never expect. But you do have to come to that point of no longer being able to do it on yourself, because we'd keep trying to do it ourselves, figure out a way to work it through. And it can be like hammering your head against a wall until you finally let go and let God. And I think that's one of the things that he helps us through. And so I think that's one of the really big ones, because it deals both with, you know, getting support in, as well as how do you use that money to fulfill God's call and to use it wisely. And it grinds on you. But the other thing I think for me has been one of my biggest struggles is time management. I find myself with one of these things where the number of requests are just limitless. And obligations, you know, well, because you're here, you have to do this. Well, because you're this guy, you have to do this. Oh, because you're a pastor, you have to do this. Or because you're on the executive council, you have to do this. You have to go to this meeting. You have to go to that. You have to do this, right? You have to do that, right? You have to fix my car because you're the only one who knows how to do it. You've got to do, and all these things come down and you're pulled in 100 different directions. You know, because, you know, oftentimes you're realizing I'm the only one who doesn't understand that wiring, or I'm the only one who understands that problem. And yet there's 100 million of these problems. And also realize you can't fill all the problems. And how do you decide which problem do you step into and which one do you let go? You know, and really praying for that. And I think for me, I tended to have a tendency to overcommit myself. You know, I felt that this morning. You know, I told a guy last week I was too busy to work on his car, and he shows up this morning. You told me to come Monday, and I'm looking at him like, I have this pile of paperwork I've got to go through, and I've got these other things. And I'm like, oh, you know, and it was something wiring. And I'm like, who can I hand that wiring off to? You know, and I'm just looking around. I'm like, there's no one else that seems to understand it, you know, and yet it'll take me all day if I go looking through it, you know. And it's just one of those things of realizing how do we balance these things?
And I think you hit on something there really important. Like, we have seen miracles. Like, we've seen people who've been healed. We've seen demon possessed people get thrown out, you know, like, or the demons get thrown out. We've seen miracles, like financial miracles and such. But, you know, you don't get to enjoy those blessings without being at that bottom where you can't do anything, you know, like where you're completely helpless. I think of Moses when he came to the Red Sea, and I'm sure he didn't feel like, oh, yay, I'm going to see a miracle in a minute. Yay, God. you know, you don't feel that way before the miracle happens. A lot of times you're feeling like, Lord, why did you bring me here? What am I doing? You know, how are we ever going to manage this? And so a lot of times those places where we've seen God move the most have also been emotionally some of our hardest times.
And I think one of the things, too, is you can't bask in that moment, too. You know, it's one of those things that you can, you see these miracles and you celebrate with them, but then your celebration is cut short because the next emergency pops up.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you're just like, Lord, just let me bask in it a little longer. You know, but and I think sometimes because the next thing comes up so quick, we sometimes don't reap the whole benefit of what's just happened.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, that's definitely true. And just going back to the start with what you guys said is, you know, you're saying there, Eddie, someone came, was looking for their car to be fixed, but you didn't have time. You know, that sense of every day is different and every day does bring a new set of challenges. So while it's probably difficult, you know, it's probably difficult in that sense to pick out one particular challenge from the last 12 years for you guys, because every day brings both its own set of challenges and joys as well. But from my perspective, it was amazing just to see how you dealt with that and how you really depend on God for that strength to face every day and face all those challenges and joys that it brings and that are ultimately from Him. So yeah, thank you so much for joining with us for this past hour and a half. I know it's quite late in Kenya. It's 3 hours ahead of where I am here in Northern Ireland, and also probably still, even though it's evening, probably still about 20 degrees warmer than where it is here. I think you got, what temperature was it today, just for everybody to be able to hear?
Peaked at up around 40 degrees.
It was about 40 degrees. I think now we're probably around 35, so we're not too bad.
Nice and cool for the night.
Go find my jumpers.
Yeah, I remember you guys have this big chest freezer in their kitchen. And when I remember some days it was just so warm, I used to just, much to Eddie's dislike, just lift the lid of the freezer open and maybe stick my head in there for a few seconds. Just to cool down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It does have a nice cooling wind, though. There's only so much cooling that brings with it. And I guess that's another one of the challenges, is living in such a warm environment as well. But thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you joining with me here for this episode, I guess. It's just a real blessing for me to be able to kind of reconnect with you guys since I was in Dukana, and just hearing all about what the Lord's continuing to do there, lives of local Gabra people, and through you guys as missionaries there, and through His own people that He's called from the Gabra as well. It's just super encouraging to me, and I hope that all of those stories that you guys have told us are both an encouragement to those that listen to this, and people can be encouraged by what's going on in the lives of yourselves and your own journeys and in the lives of those around you. Thank you for listening to this episode of AIM's Connect podcast. We hope that you've been encouraged by what you've heard, and that you commit to praying for the work of establishing Christ-centered churches amongst all African peoples.